The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:37. We will finish at 4:07. I will now recognize the honourable leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier announced he would be making changes to taxes seniors pay in this province. Yet days before, Mr. Speaker, the same Premier hiked 1,400 user fees by 6%, on top of the 2% hike the Premier did, Mr. Speaker, only 2 years ago. Mr. Speaker, among other things, home care fee has been increased by 5.8%. These fee increases take effect this week, while the Premier's tax changes, Mr. Speaker, are supposed to take effect after the next election. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier tell seniors why he's hiked user fees effective immediately, but is waiting until after the election to fulfill his proposed tax changes?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, seniors this year, just as they have for a number of years now, who are on the GIS, come September will receive a full rebate of every cent that they have paid in GIS. As a result of an initiative taken by this government. In addition, Mr. Speaker, because of the work of the Minister of Finance and of our colleagues in the Cabinet, an additional $22 million have been invested in providing home care services directly to those people who need it. Mr. Speaker. This is an improvement in the lives of seniors, one that we're very proud of and one that I would hope the Leader of the Opposition would agree with.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
The Premier forgot to mention that he's increased power rates in the province of Nova Scotia by 30%, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier forgot to mention that he increased 1,400 user fees in the province, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he forgot to mention that he increased HST by 2%, Mr. Speaker. And by the way, I just want to tell the Premier, seniors also pay those fees and taxes, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, most savings that seniors will eventually see from the proposed tax changes will be swallowed up by other costs that the NDP, Mr. Speaker, have imposed on Nova Scotians. The Premier hiked user fees this week as he stood by and watched power rates increase by over 30%. Seniors are struggling with the same cost pressures that other Nova Scotians are, often, Mr. Speaker, on fixed incomes. This means they are more sensitive to user fee hikes, to tax hikes of any kind, Mr. Speaker, and they're more sensitive to the increase of power bills, Mr. Speaker, and I might add 30% under this Premier's watch. So my question to the Premier, why is the Premier only interested in more election promises rather than tackling the real cost pressures seniors face today?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I would point out to the Leader of the Opposition that, in fact, the increases in power rates are a result of decisions that were made by Liberal governments who shackled us to the international fossil fuel markets, and that it was the increase in the international price of coal that drove the fee increases. And in fact, something that we on this side who are actually trying to ensure doesn't happen in the future. In addition, Mr. Speaker, when the HST increase came in, we actually took the money from that increase and gave it to seniors, gave it to people on low incomes, not only to offset, but to more than offset the amount of money that would be paid by a 2% increase in the HST, Mr. Speaker. Seniors, as a result of that measure, are better off. And most assuredly, Mr. Speaker, Speaker, they are better off because now, contrary to the wishes of the Leader of the Opposition, they no longer have to pay 10% on the electrical and energy costs in this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what they pay, Mr. Speaker, is the NDP electricity tax, Mr. Speaker. The very tax, Mr. Speaker, that he opposed when in opposition, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, saying one thing prior to an election and then doing something else, Mr. Speaker. We all know, Mr. Speaker, this is yet another election promise. And every Nova Scotian in this province knows what an election promise from this Premier is worth, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, with no tax increases and no promised program cuts, and Nova Scotians watched as this Premier's hiked taxes, he has cut $65 million from education, and, Mr. Speaker, put social programs in jeopardy. And Nova Scotians are bracing for more of this tomorrow. Mr. Speaker, the Premier doesn't have a revenue problem. He's got a priority problem, Mr. Speaker. After breaking his election promises of 2009, how can seniors trust him to deliver yet on another election promise, Mr. Speaker?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we keep our election promises, but I want you to think about this, Mr. Speaker. That's right. We keep our election promises. But I want you to think about this. I want you to think about this.
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
I want you to think about this, Mr. Speaker. The last time that the Liberals balanced the budget in this province was 1976. Mr. Speaker, Nnedi Akam and each got a perfect 10. Mr. Speaker, people alive then could still remember when the Leafs won the Cup.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, as a Leafs fan, I'm kind of offended by that most recent answer. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Chair of the Treasury Board. Many Nova Scotians are skeptical that the NDP will present a truly balanced budget tomorrow. And they have good reason to be, since it's the Treasury Board that approved the $27 million hole in last year's budget. Mr. Speaker, prepayments to universities have also been used in the past to create the fiction of a balanced budget, but that practice belongs in the past, Mr. Speaker, and is no business in today's budgets. So my question to the Chair of the Treasury Board is, has he provided our universities with their 2013-14 budget allocations?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will say this, that tomorrow, my good friend, the Minister of Finance, will present a balanced budget, and the details will be in there. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in fact, the Treasury Board Chair has provided our universities with their 2013-14 budget allocations, and I have the letter that he sent to them right here, which I'll table in just a moment if he wants to refresh his memory. But there's something very interesting about this letter, Mr. Speaker. It does point out how much they are going to receive for 2014, all of the universities, and it points out how much they received 2 years ago in 2011-12. But what the letter is silent on is how much they're going to be accounted for in the year that we're just ending, 2012-13. Very convenient if the President of the Treasury Board plans to stuff 2 years of funding into the year that just ended. So I will table this letter from the President of the Treasury Board, and I will ask him, why did he omit the current year information? Is it because he plans to prepay the universities and present a falsely balanced budget tomorrow?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've answered this question in his first question. But, Mr. Speaker, the fact is, if there's any history of prepays, all that member has to do is look in the mirror.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that the past is the past. They promised to be better. They promised to be better. People voted for them.
Order.
Because they said...
Order, please. Order. Order. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party has the floor. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, they didn't change. They rely on the same old tricks, Mr. Speaker, and that's what's wrong. They spent $100,000 to get Deloitte to tell them that prepays should be in the past, something that we fully accept, but they don't. Nova Scotians deserve a truly balanced budget tomorrow, so will the Chair of Treasury Board stand in his place right now and assure everyone there'll be no gimmicks or prepays or other kind of accounting tricks to balance the budget tomorrow?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
I think the only tricks Mr. Speaker is talking about is the tricks his memory's playing on him, Mr. Speaker, because he seems to forget what they did. But, Mr. Speaker, as I said, my friend, the Minister of Finance, will present a balanced budget for all Nova Scotians in this House, and it will be a good budget, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, since the Premier has taken power, the economy has stalled, and communities across this province are dealing with high unemployment rates. While it may create a newspaper headline or good photo op, handing over hundreds of millions of free money to large corporations is poor public policy. Nova Scotians know this, Mr. Speaker, and the proof is in the numbers. 6,400 jobs were lost last year alone, Mr. Speaker, the same year the Premier handed over to hundreds of millions of dollars large corporations. My question to the Premier, will the Premier explain to Nova Scotians why newspaper headlines and photo ops are more important to him than getting Nova Scotians back to work?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to correct what the Leader of the Opposition said. Of course, we don't hand over any money to anyone. What we do is we make investments where we will see a return for the people of Nova Scotia. So, Mr. Speaker, in every instance where any money is invested by the province, it is done on the basis of a commercial loan. It is only forgiven, if it is forgiven, once money comes in so that the people of Nova Scotia, for example, in the case of the largest industrial contract in our history, the shipbuilding contract, the people of Nova Scotia will realize more than a $2 billion profit on that investment. And that money will be used to support health, education, the other services that are important for the people of Nova Scotia. That, I believe, is not just an explanation. It begs the question, what in the world would they do if they were in government? What in the world would they do?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the closer we get to an election, Mr. Speaker, the larger the Premier's numbers comes on the return of the people of Nova Scotia. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, he's handed over $300 million, Mr. Speaker, of free money, Mr. Speaker, of free money, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, anyone with common sense will tell you that in order to grow our economy, Mr. Speaker, we need to diversify it and grow it one job at a time. However, that doesn't fit with the Premier's photo op schedule. He just wants the splashy headlines, Mr. Speaker. That's all he's looking for. And the corporations, Mr. Speaker, see the Premier coming. So while the Premier is handing over hundreds of millions of dollars to corporations, Cape Breton is struggling with the 17% unemployment rate, the North Shore 12.5%, the Annapolis Valley's 10.4%, and the Southern Nova Scotia's 12.2%, Mr. Speaker, unemployment rate under this Premier's watch. So what will it take for the Premier to learn that his corporate welfare agenda is not working for Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, over the last 7 years, the province of Nova Scotia has made more than $80 million on commercial loans that it has given to companies in this province. That return is used for either further investment by bringing companies here or in the services that the people of this province need. Not a single cent was given to Irving or to anyone else, a commercial loan. And the Leader of the Opposition can say otherwise if he wants, but he knows that it's untrue. And at some point in time, he is actually going to have to account for that to the people. They know that what he says is untrue. And the people who work in the yard, Mr. Speaker, the hardworking marine workers, the architects, the engineers who are there, the people who are reliant on that contract
for the work that they do and for the paychecks that they use, that they take home to support their families, Mr. Speaker. We, on this side of the aisle, we support the working people of Nova Scotia. I'm not sure who they're speaking for.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Someone ought to tell him he's the Premier of Nova Scotia, not the Governor of the Bank of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. The way he's handing out money, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier likes to brag about lowering the small business tax rate, but what he forgets to tell Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, is he's also lowered the threshold amount, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is essentially penalizing success. So let's get it straight, right? Mr. Speaker, if you're a small business in the province of Nova Scotia, you've been successful, this Premier wants you to pay more tax. At the same time, he's handing out free money to large corporations, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, over 6,400 fewer Nova Scotians employed than last year, while the Premier finally admits he can't grow the economy by writing blank checks to large corporations and abandoning hardworking Nova Scotians.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, if the Leader of the Opposition had his way, he'd walk away from thousands of Nova Scotian workers who will have good jobs, who will, young people, have a future in those industries, whether it's in Port Hawkesbury or in Halifax, Mr. Speaker. This government, through its tax abatement in the small business tax, have put $78 million back into the hands of small business people, Mr. Speaker. And the reduction, as has been laid out, of the current reduction, the small business tax and the threshold, means that more small businesses will qualify. They will get more money, and the exact companies that he's talking about, the mega giants, the Exxons, all of those, they won't get the small business tax break because that money will be repositioned into small business.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. You know, you can almost, well, you never get a straight answer on the Maritime Link. Go to the Minister of Energy, the Premier, or frankly anyone in the NDP, because they either don't have the answers or they don't want people to know them. Yesterday, the Minister and his caucus colleagues carefully avoided giving any reason why they won't extend the timeline for the Utility and Review Board to make a decision in the best interest of Nova Scotians. To quote the consumer advocate, all Nova Scotians are entitled to be assured the board has adequate time to access and consider all relevant evidence and to determine what is the lowest cost long-term alternative. And I'll table that. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister change the regulations and allow the board whatever time it deems appropriate and necessary to properly review the Maritime Link? Or will his promise of last year of a complete, fair and transparent review by the board just go down as one more broken NDP promise?
The Honourable Minister of Environment. Energy, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure the Ministry of Environment could answer the question adequately as well, but we all know that the Maritime Link is an important project here in Nova Scotia and in the Maritime region, and it's going to provide us an opportunity to get the lowest, fairest rates for electricity for Nova Scotians. And, you know, the Maritime Link Act that set up the review with the UARB was passed in this House unanimously. It was supported by the Liberal Party, it was supported by the Progressive Conservative Party, and supported here by government. And when the opportunity came to have the regulations out for discussion last summer, did we hear from the Liberal Party? Not at all. Did we hear from the other opposition party? Not at all. And so there's been lots of opportunity there. Plus, we consulted with the UARB, and they indicated that the half-year timeline was adequate to fully address and review the situation. So it will continue in the six-month time frame, and we're looking forward to the decision by the end of July.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, maybe you should have given it to the Minister of Environment. Maybe we would have got an answer for once. You know, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Energy, it's entertaining to listen to him because, of course, The fact is that he talks about supporting the act. The act which he insisted for weeks wasn't even necessary. And I will table the Hansard from that, where I specifically said, we'll support the act, but they put it all in regulations and we'll just have to hope they get them right. Then he talks about, then he says, well, nobody said anything last summer. Well, you know what, Mr. Speaker, last summer, he promised us that the consumer advocate and everybody else said 6 months would be enough. Well, in March and in February, when the documents were filed, the consumer advocate, the small business advocate, the Wind Energy Association, almost all the other interveners have said, you know what? It turns out that isn't going to be enough time. There was no way for them or anybody else to know last summer. So, Mr. Speaker, the minister previously promised a full and complete review by the Utility and Review Board. The consumer advocate, the small business advocate, they all say that's not possible now. Not possible. So, Mr. Speaker, will he keep his commitment from last year and allow the time needed to review the project fully? Or again, is he simply going to break another NDP promise?
The Honourable the Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's interesting the Honourable Member has to now quote himself in this House and put forward his own material. But the... I'm not sure if we got it right or not, but the UARB is seriously looking at this issue. There's a lot of material there, and a lot of it has been presented before. It's information on the Atlantic Energy Gateway and other information that's been out for public review for a long time. And I think there's 6 months is an adequate time period for the review. The UARB has agreed to that, and again, I'm looking forward to their decision by the end of midsummer.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, the NDP spends so much time claiming that the opposition has said things that we have not said that we have no choice but to quote ourselves back to him. It's the only time that he listens. You know, I think, Mr. Speaker, I really got to ask that you get the minister's earpiece checked, because I think part of the problem is the earpiece might not be working, and so he doesn't always hear what we're saying. You know, Mr. Speaker, we're talking about billions of dollars coming out of the pockets of ratepayers, and we're talking about the profits of Emera being propped up once again by the NDP. You know, he says it's the cheapest and best option. He complains that when people like the consumer advocate say that more time is needed and that what he's saying is wrong and that a review can't be done in that 6 months. So, Mr. Speaker, is the minister saying that the consumer advocate and the small business advocate are wrong? And if not, what is he trying to hide?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the Honourable Member might want to check his sources there, but the UARB has a role, has a job, has a responsibility to examine all the evidence, to cross-examine witnesses, to call in expertise that they require, and make sure that everything's there that they need to make an informed decision. And they're going to do just that. That's their role. That's their responsibility. And if I had more time, I'd tell you a little bit about perhaps what the Liberals are proposing here for energy, but we'll save that for another day. But I don't have the need a lot of time, but I'll discuss it another day. But the UARB has a role and responsibility, and they're going to do their job within the 6 month time frame. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Education, parents and students, school boards, communities across the province have been put through heartache and turmoil over the potential closure of rural schools for months and months. Some communities and towns have actually been pitted one against the other as they go through a flawed school review process. Now, Mr. Speaker, on the eve of an election, the Minister flip-flops on school closures. I'll ask her, why did the Minister put so many families, students, and school boards through the ringer if she was truly going to suspend the process all along?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I just want to clarify that I'm not able to put a halt to anything. What I've done today is I have asked the school boards to suspend the review process for the year 13-14 and to delay any of the decisions that were made in the year 12-13. I've asked the school boards if that request, and I will hear back if they're going to honour that request by April the 30th. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Actually, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Education is in a position to halt these things and chose not to for the last 2 years. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I have here with me a quote from the Minister of Education just last year, which I will table, where she says, and I quote, "Parents are going to have to recognize that not all schools will stay open." Those are the words of the Minister of Education, who then went on to say, "I know we'd like to each have our own little school, but we do have to sometimes take a deep breath and move our children off to another school." Those are the words of the Minister of Education last year. I'll table that for her. My question, Mr. Speaker, is everyone who read that, parents, school board, students, they took the minister at her word that she was going to force them down this awful road. So now that she's flip-flopped, will she apologize to the school boards, to the students, and to the parents who took her at her word when she said they were just going to have to realize that schools are going to close?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as everyone knows, that schools are the heart of our communities, and schools are very important in every one of our communities. And the process, the request that I made today is not going to save all of our schools in the province. We have an issue with declining enrollment, and we have excess capacity. But we have a process that we inherited that we did try to improve, and it didn't work. And I am hearing back from parents, community members, that this process has been adversarial and heartbreaking. So the process finished on March the 31st. I've asked the school boards if they would suspend the process. And if the honourable member will look at legislation, I am not able to interfere. All I can do is ask the school board if they'll honour the request that I've made and ask them today, and we'll hear back by April the 30th. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplement.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister has had 4 years to fix the process if she thought it was truly broken, and chose not to, Mr. Speaker. This announcement today has nothing to do with enrollments or a process. It's all about election year politics. That's what's going on today, Mr. Speaker. In fact, Mr. Speaker, just last May, the minister was asked about stopping the school review process, and she said, and I quote, and I'll table her own words, just last May she said, "Definitely there will be no moratorium on the school process." The words of the minister last year. Now that we're in an election year, she has flip-flopped, Mr. Speaker, and so I will ask the minister, will she admit that today's announcement is nothing more than political posturing on the backs of our rural students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I'm standing here and admitting is I'm listening to Nova Scotians. This process has not been working the way that it should be working. We inherited this process. We did work on it over the last couple of years. I'm hearing back from communities. I'm hearing back from school board members. I'm hearing back from full school boards that this process is not working. So we are asking the school boards. I cannot call a moratorium. There is no legislative capacity for the Minister of Education to do that. I can ask the school boards. I made a request of the school boards if they will suspend the process while we work together with all of Nova Scotia, with all departments of government, with the UNSM, to come out at the end of this with a process that is going to work for our students in our communities.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Maritime Link deal that the NDP is rushing through the UARB process contains too many unknowns. As we are discovering, the NDP either don't know or won't tell Nova Scotians what this deal means for our future power rates. Small and medium-sized businesses have consistently ranked energy costs as their main concern for the last number of years. And the NDP's silence on the impact of power rates is distressing. So my question, can the Minister of Economic Development tell Nova Scotian businesses what this multi-billion dollar project will mean for their power rates, their competitiveness, and their ability to remain a vital part of the communities past 2017?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what Muskrat Falls is going to mean to the business community of Nova Scotia is stability and security. It's about their future, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are on the right track, and I don't know where the member opposite is coming from, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Where I'm coming from, Mr. Speaker, is that small businesses rank energy and power costs as their most critical cost. That's where I'm coming from. That's the question. That's what I'm asking, Mr. Speaker. This minister should know how this multi-billion dollar deal is going to affect small businesses in Nova Scotia. He certainly doesn't seem to know what the deal means for small businesses, the same businesses who have cited soaring energy as their top concern for as long as this government has been in power. This minister is out of touch, Mr. Speaker. So my question, why would a Minister of Economic Development blindly champion a multi-billion dollar deal for which he has no idea the final impact on the Nova Scotia economy?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm at a loss here, and I'm at a loss because what Muskrat Falls means to the region of Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the jobs that that's going to create for Cape Breton Island is unbelievable, and all members of this House should be grateful and thankful. And Mr. Speaker, For businesses in all across this province and for residents, Mr. Speaker, it's about the future of energy in this province, Mr. Speaker. Stability, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, I'm looking forward to see how the Maritime Link is going to create an influx of jobs that the Minister's talking about in Cape Breton, but I will agree with one point, Mr. Speaker. He is definitely at a loss. There's no question about that. This minister has sat silently while energy costs have increased 30% in the last year alone, Mr. Speaker, the largest increase in the entire country. He has been silent while businesses have struggled to stay afloat with these soaring energy costs. Last year, the NDP failed to disclose a $27 million overstatement in revenues, even though they were advised to by the Auditor General. Mr. Speaker, either the minister knows the impact of this multi-million dollar deal on the cost of power for businesses in Nova Scotia, and he's choosing to not disclose it, or he simply has no idea what the impact is past 2017. And we certainly all believe it's the second one, Mr. Speaker. But I will ask that minister, will he tell Nova Scotians which scenario it is?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, want good jobs, Mr. Speaker. They want sustainability. They want a future. They want to be able to, there's many Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, expats that want to come home. Muskrat Falls is a step in that right direction, Mr. Speaker. It's a step in the direction for all businesses, small, medium-sized, large businesses, to create stable electricity and energy prices for the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, to ensure the future of good jobs in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on May 12, 2009, the then candidate for Premier promised, and I quote, to balance budgets, to not add to the debt, and to make the provision that we can for capital spending that is achievable. And I will table that quote for the benefit of the Premier. Those were the words of the candidate for Premier while campaigning in 2009. Since that time, Mr. Speaker, the NDP has added over $1 billion to our provincial debt and tabled four consecutive deficit budgets, and I will table the projected net debt of the province in the budget, which shows that it has grown by $1 billion under his term in office. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is promising to balance the budget yet again. My question for the Premier, why should Nova Scotians believe the Premier of 2013 when they were let down so badly by the candidate for Premier of 2009?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, quite the opposite. The reality is that during that election campaign, one of the key platform planks of the day happened to revolve around the question of stimulus spending that was coming from the federal government, from Mr. Harper. And in fact, the Progressive Conservatives of the day, you may remember, had laid out a plan for about $1.5 billion worth of spending. And the question that was routinely put to all of the leaders at that time was whether or not we would maximize the investment that was put in place by the stimulus spending of the federal government. We said that we would, and we did.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's what the Premier says now, but it's not what he said when he was the candidate for Premier in 2009, as that CBC article shows. In fact, Mr. Speaker, when the Premier came into office, Nova Scotia had a $19.7 million surplus. I have with me the message from the Minister that accompanied the financial statements of the province that year, which clearly shows that. I'll table that for the benefit of the House. It is kind of ironic that the government changed between the end of the year and when the message from the minister was signed, and of course it was signed by the new NDP Minister of Finance of the day, the member for Halifax Fairview. So, Mr. Speaker, just like that famous Lucy and Charlie Brown cartoon, the Premier is once again holding the balanced budget football for Nova Scotians to take another kick at. We all know that, how that ended for poor old Charlie Brown. Now we are paying the highest taxes in all of Canada, skyrocketing power rates, expensive user fees, and on and on and on. Will the Premier admit that just like Charlie Brown, Nova Scotians are flat on their back because of his failed attempts to balance the budget?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. You know, in the very last year of the Conservative decade, they overspent their budget by $408 million, $408 million more than they budgeted, and they claim that that was a balance, Mr. Speaker. Now, it happened that there were revenues that came in that same year, but nobody would call that a balance, that you set a budget figure and then miss it by almost $500 million and go around and tell people somehow your budget is balanced, Mr. Speaker. You want to talk about a kind of hocus-pocus, that is conservative hocus-pocus.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier can say what he wants. His first Minister of Finance signed on the dotted line that they inherited a balanced set of books. That's not disputable. The Auditor General signed on the dotted line that the Premier inherited a balanced set of books. That is not disputable. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, I was so pleased to see the Premier's second and current Minister of Finance write a letter to the editor of the Globe and Mail, which I will table, saying that Nova Scotia has had three deficit budgets in the last 10 years, and all three, of course, are the most recent three. So, unlike the Premier, the previous Minister of Finance for the NDP, the current Minister of Finance for the NDP, and the Auditor General all say they inherited a $19.7 million surplus. Here we are 4 years later, not the candidate for Premier, the actual Premier raised the HST to collect an extra $1 billion, added another $1 billion on top of that to our provincial debt, hikes up user fees and makes it very expensive to live here. Will the Premier finally admit the truth of what his current minister, his past minister, and the Auditor General says, that his failed attempts to manage the province's finances have made Nova Scotians pay the price over and over and over again?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the leader of the Conservative Party thinks. I mean, departmental spending has gone down.
Departmental spending every year has come in under budget. We have managed to roll back what Deloitte pointed out was going to be a $1.3 billion deficit that is completely and totally and absolutely attributable to the former Conservative government. And on top of that, I was surprised to see, as I'm sure a lot of people were, not just in my caucus, the Liberal caucus, and in the province of Nova Scotia, but I was surprised to see at the last convention the leader of the Conservative Party standing in front of a podium that said, "Stop more jobs, Mr. Speaker." That's what the Leader of the Opposition is up to.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question, Mr. Speaker, is through you to the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, the Premier and the NDP government continue to boast about the Maritime Link when they can't or won't tell Nova Scotians what the price of power will be, nor what impact it will have on the delivery of service. Rising power rates, Mr. Speaker, are forcing school boards to make tough decisions as this government continues to cut funding to education. School boards are being asked to do more with less. So my question to the Minister is this. Can the Minister of Education tell Nova Scotians what the multi-billion dollar Muskrat Falls project will mean for the cost of delivery of public school programs in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. That is a very interesting question, and I will say that the Muskrat Falls project will have no impact on the school boards and the budgets. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I expect that the Minister may regret saying that because people are expecting that stable prices or lower prices or whatever they're boasting about will be transferred over to the school boards who are paying huge electricity bills. But I guess there's not going to be any impact, so they're on their own. School boards are facing rising costs. In 2011, South Shore Board paid over $1 million for power rates. Tri-County paid $1.2 million. And CSAP paid nearly over $1 million. So, Mr. Speaker, the cost of power to these schools and to these school boards continues to grow. Yet this minister has cut funding and has taken away any of the money that had been given to boards to pay for those costs. So my question to the minister is, when will the minister stand up for the people she's supposed to represent, show some leadership, and protect the funding that goes for our kids?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We have been investing in our children in our province through our funding formula, which has been improved with our school boards. That funding formula runs through a model where we include all of the costs that a school board has, including the teacher's salaries. All of that runs through a funding formula so that we make sure that we are funding each and every child in this province appropriately. And this budget that's coming forward is increasing spending on our children. Our per child cost is going up over $300 more per student in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The funding formula is a formula that is designed to distribute monies to school boards, but the inflationary costs, which had formerly been covered, have not been covered, and that's what is killing school boards. That's where their money is going. This minister and her NDP government are tying Nova Scotia to this multi-million dollar agreement, at the same time gutting public education. And how can parents trust that this minister will ever stand up in the best interest of kids when she continues to reduce the funding? Five boards are getting less money in this minister's wonderful budget.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we are protecting the boards that have had significant enrollment decline. these school boards have been protected with our funding. We are making sure we are investing in our students. We have Schools Plus. We have Succeeding in Reading. We are making sure that our math is going to be meeting the needs of our students so that we graduate successful students into our society. We have been investing in our children. We are doing things differently. We have significant challenges, and we have met them with our school boards. Every child in this province will have the opportunity to have a very good education. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for the Public Service Commission. In the spring of 2010, the Minister of Finance promised to reduce spending. He said, "We will reduce the civil service by 10% by 2013. At the time, there were 10,813 positions, so reducing the civil service by 1,000 was the promise. Every year since, this government has stated they have made no progress on this commitment. Can the minister report any progress this year?"
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to report, and certainly more details will be available after the budget, but we have made significant progress in that commitment. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm kind of laughing because I might be psychic. One of my predictions may be coming true. One thing I noticed every year when this government tabled its budget, in each of the past year, they reported that they needed about 700 people more than they actually used in the previous year. And at $100,000 per person, if you look at salaries, benefits, and office space, we're looking at an amount of over $70 million that this government has had every year within its budget to play with. So, Mr. Speaker, are we going to see this same tactic used this year, or perhaps the minister is giving us an inkling now, will the estimated and actual job numbers more closely match each other?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You have to compare apples to apples, and I can say on the floor of this assembly that we have fewer full-time equivalents than when we came into office, and I certainly will be very pleased to provide the details in the future. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister may be setting us up for clearing this issue up. If they've been overinflating their FTE numbers by upwards of 700 a year in each of the last 3 years, and if magically that number is erased this year, we'll know that they were fudging their numbers all the way along, and if they balance the budget tomorrow, this is one of the ways in which they've played with the budget to balance it. So, Mr. Speaker, over 12,000 people have lost jobs during this government's term. They have raised the HST to pay for their expense of their governing. They broke their promise not to raise the HST, and they also broke their promise, unless we're seeing something different today, to reduce the size of government. So my question for the minister, when will this government stop playing with numbers to justify tax increases and make it seem like an achievement to balance a budget?
Order, please. I'd remind the honourable member that fudging the budget is an unparliamentary... And I'd ask the honourable member to retract that, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't think of another word to replace that, but I do retract the word.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's no surprise to the members of the House of Assembly that we were on an unsustainable path in terms of our expenditures over the last number of years until we became government. And certainly the FTEs in the public service rose by 1,000 between 2003 and 2009. And we have worked very, very closely with the civil service. We know that we're in a time when the public expects us to live within our means. At the same time, they want to ensure that they have quality programs and services which are delivered by the civil service. And so we are very pleased that within a very tough situation, we have been able to reverse that trend. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I was taking a time out. So, Mr. Speaker, every time you turn on TV, Nova Scotians are watching ads about the virtues of the collaborative health centres, because we're finding out they aren't emergency centres, even though every community doesn't have one, and despite the fact that ERs were closed over 17,000 hours last year. In fact, supplementary public accounts since fiscal year ended March 31, 2010 shows that $6.3 million was transferred by the Department of Health and Wellness to Communications Nova Scotia. All of this at a time when this minister and the previous minister and the ministerial assistant and the deputy minister have stated repeatedly, we can't afford an insulin pump program. Could the minister please tell us why people with diabetes were told there was no money when $6.3 million has been spent over the last 3 years on advertising and communications?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud of the accomplishment that we've been able to make over the last 3.5 years as a government, Mr. Speaker. When we came into government, we were left with a financial mess. We knew we had to do business different in the province of Nova Scotia. The Conservative left us with a financial mess, and we had to do things different, Mr. Speaker. We chose a different path. We didn't chose the path of the past Liberal government when it comes to reform in health care, Mr. Speaker. The cut-and-slash approach that they took back in the 90s. As a former health care worker, I remember those days, Mr. Speaker. We chose to work with district health authorities. We chose to work with clinicians who work within health care system here in Nova Scotia to make improvements, to have better access for Nova Scotians to the services they need, Mr. Speaker. We're very proud of our accomplishments in that.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With all due respect to the Minister, there's a difference between informing Nova Scotians and brainwashing them with their own taxpayer dollars. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, the faster an individual with uncontrolled diabetes is introduced to pump therapy, the better the patient outcomes, the greater the savings to our health care system. For the last 3 years, this NDP government has spent the same amount of money it would cost to fund a comprehensive insulin pump program on self-promotion. In fact, Mr. Speaker, of the $6.3 million transferred to Communications Nova Scotia, $1.8 million has been spent on advertising, graphic displays, so the minister has fancy backdrops and props and video production. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, why is funding self-promotion more important than funding an insulin pump program?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the things we've done is actually change models of care within the healthcare system across the province. Collaborative emergency centres are one of those changes, Mr. Speaker. The 811 system is another change that we need to ensure that Nova Scotians know how to access healthcare services, Mr. Speaker. We asked Dr. Ross, who is a well-respected emergency room physician, Mr. Speaker, to go around the province to try to evaluate and figure out how we could change the process of doing and delivering health care here in Nova Scotia. And in the report that he delivered to the government, one of the key areas that he said was to ensure if you're going to make changes to the health care system, that you inform Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. If they don't know about 811, they're not going to call it, Mr. Speaker. If they don't know about the changes of collaborative emergency centres or how to access primary care, Mr. Speaker, they're not going to access it. So we take full advantage of ensuring that Nova Scotians know about the changes we're making, and I think the system here in Nova Scotia is better off for it.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can the Minister for Community Services please tell the members of this House what the multi-billion dollar Maritime Link project will mean for electricity rates for low-income Nova Scotians after 2017?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Maritime Link will mean hope for those individuals who are more vulnerable, low income, because there will be stability in our energy rates in this province that we have never seen in the history of Nova Scotia. So it's hope and stability.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, but people on income assistance can't eat hope, they can't heat their homes with hope, and they can't buy clothes for their children with hope. Mr. Speaker, this government's inability to tell Nova Scotians how much power rates are going to increase with the Maritime Link project gives us all reason to be concerned. In 2011-2012, there were 11,300 income assistance clients who reported electricity in their monthly budgets, and that came to an annual cost of $12.9 million, about $1,141 per case. As well, there were 1,391 cases reporting utility arrears that totaled almost $1 million, $920,000. This minister should have a vested interest in ensuring that we have a full understanding of power rates before the government blindly signs on to this multi-billion dollar project. This has a direct impact on nearly 30,000 clients and her department's ability to deliver services. Will the minister please tell us today what impact the Maritime Link will have on power rates, like a dollar figure for income assistance clients?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we not only give hope, we give action. And that's something that group on the other side never did. They always gave a misleading hope, as they do today. The action that we have taken is we have invested $420 million to help the most vulnerable in this province. We created affordable tax credit. We created the poverty reduction tax credit. We're giving back. The HST is not being charged on home heating for those individuals and all Nova Scotians. We're also helping seniors with respect to the GIS. They no longer have to pay income tax. We also have over the years increased the land tax rate rebate for seniors by $200 than the first year. We've helped foster families by increasing their per diem. We have helped people that are on disabilities by increasing their enhanced family numbers amount of per diem. There is a long, long list that I can continue on with that we have done to support Nova Scotians, and the next part of that list is to create stability in energy, which is critical for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there was no answer there. There was no dollar figure there about the Maritime Link. Sorry, guys. The question wasn't about all these other programs. The question was about the Maritime Link, and the minister knows it. This minister is responsible for housing. Her department is responsible for income assistance. Her department pays nearly $13 million a year on power bills for clients. Surely she knows what the impact will be of the Maritime Link on her department's ability to deliver services. Will the minister please share with Nova Scotians what impact increased power rates from the Maritime Link will have on her department and her clients?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the impact will be stability, something that we would not have from either the Liberals or the Conservatives. It means we are the first government who has brought forth a very, very good housing strategy that we'll be looking at in terms of our cost for power is part of a housing strategy, which means we're going to have stability. And so stability is the key word. So Nova Scotians have that comfort that they know in their future and for generations to come, they're going to have a consistent, stable energy rate. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on a new question.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Community Services please tell the members of this House what impact the multi-billion dollar link project and its guaranteed increase in power rates will have on the delivery of services at women's centres, family resource centres or transition houses after 2017?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Well, Mr. Speaker, once again, it will be stability, along with the fact that when we became government, for the first time in decades, the transition houses and women's centres got an investment of $500,000, and they recently got another investment from this government. So it's not only stability, it's investing in those people, because they're so important to us, and we see it as a government, the job that they do, and it's a job well done. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, non-profit agencies are telling us they cannot absorb any more cost increases. This government has imposed a freeze on direct grants while costs continue to soar. Calls for services are increasing. Non-profit agencies, much like schools and hospitals, are asked to do more with less. If the Minister for Community Services cannot tell members of this House how much power rates are set to increase with the Maritime Link project, how can she freeze budgets for not-for-profit agencies, squeezing community supports even further?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Well, firstly, Mr. Speaker, it is not correct in saying that we have frozen any of the grants. We have not done that at all. And the other, once again, is any organization, what they need when they're planning for the future is to know about stability. The problem that they face today is because of the fact of the past decisions of relying on fossil fuel has created a situation in today's society that the energy rates are going up because we're relying on coal, which has gone up 70%. So I believe that those nonprofit organizations are going to be very pleased with a government that has a plan for stability in their energy rates for years to come.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Agencies see their budget lines for power increasing. They're being forced to cut outreach, cut staff, and cut hours in order to make ends meet. Affordable housing organizations are having to sell units so they can meet their increased operating costs. If the Minister for Community Services will not offer an increase in funds to organizations that deal with increased power rates, can she tell them, please, then, what are they to cut? Is it programs, staff, beds, counselling services?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Once again, Mr. Speaker, what we're talking about is stability for the future. We also provide efficiency Nova Scotia to those particular organizations. And since it's question period, I would like to know what it's going to cost to have Quebec Power, Quebec Hydro, who had to turn off their big logo, which is a Q, this winter, because they didn't even have enough power to run their own Q. So how do they think the power's going to get here to Nova Scotia? We'll be in the dark. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. Will the Minister of Education tell members of this House how much her department spent on advertising and promotions during the last year?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I look forward to budget estimates, and I will be very glad to answer that question at that time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Well, I guess the Minister doesn't understand the difference between actuals and projections, because I'm asking for actuals. They're actuals that were spent. And for the information of the Minister, I will share what her department provided, so nobody needs to wait until tomorrow. Mr. Speaker, the Minister spent $130,000 on promoting her education plan. She spent nearly $75,000 on promoting class size ads when parents were furious at her. and she also budgeted $500,000 for lunch bags. And Mr. Speaker,
the Honourable Member for Colchester North has the floor, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister, has the Minister any idea what has been spent in her department for a promotion in the last fiscal year?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I definitely will bring that forward. I don't have the number at my fingertips, but I would like to make a correction around the Play, Talk, and Learn bags, which are a resource that we send out to all of our youngest students in this province. It has interactive material and books and learning materials to have interaction. It was over a three-year, it was not a lunch bag, it was resource material for 3 years for our children. Which is very interesting. We did it in-house, and we worked with our department and child care child experts to make sure that we had the appropriate materials. When the person opposite, when the member opposite was in the position I am, she contracted that out and only provided those materials for very few children in this province.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think Nova Scotians would be more interested in the Minister knowing what's going on in her department rather than trying to pick apart somebody else. Mr. Speaker, when you add up the promotional numbers that I just gave you, it's $750,000. Now, Mr. Speaker, over 1,100 support positions were cut from our public education system. 700 teachers lost their jobs. And at the same time, the minister spent $750,000 on self-promotion. So will the minister please tell the students who lost their EA support, those on wait lists for speech-language pathology, those who need extra support, Will she please tell them why did she find and where did she find $750,000 and why did she choose to use it on self-promotion election promises rather than helping those kids who needed it?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to make a few corrections. We had a number of teachers in this province that retired over the last number of years, and those are the numbers that she's citing. We have as many teachers in the province with fewer students than we've ever had. The numbers I will bring forward, but these numbers that keep coming up are not true numbers. We had 710 retired, the same as every other situation over many years of teaching. We have the lowest teacher-student ratio ever in this province. Yes. In terms of our support, the people that support our children with needs, those numbers have not changed. I don't know where she's finding these numbers. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Cape Breton Region Municipality has taken incredible initiative in preparing a capital plan to partner with the provincial and federal governments. The goal of this plan is to ensure a prosperous future for the municipality. It focuses on infrastructure improvements and building a progressive, dynamic port city. My question to the Premier is, will the Premier support the CBRM's proposal?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had the opportunity, of course, to meet with the mayor of CBRM when I was last in Cape Breton. We had a great chat about the budget. He presented me with a portfolio. I indicated to him at the time that we were waiting to see, among other things, what the new Build Canada Fund was going to look like. But I told him that I was supportive of multi-year budgeting on capital projects, that we were willing to work with CBRM to, you know, now that they had outlined kind of the broad brush projects, that we're willing to work with them in order to dig down into those projects and to determine what they would cost, and to work with him in putting forward those projects to the Bill Canada Fund over a multi-year period, and to try and achieve what we both want, which is strengthened infrastructure in the province.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's important to develop capital plans for municipalities, and more so to continue communication between municipalities and the province. Open and honest negotiation is one of the key components of successful capital planning. If the mayor is not given a clear commitment financially, what direction or criteria has your government given to the mayor to assist with the evolution of his plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I told the mayor of Cape Breton was Cape Breton Regional Municipality was simply this, that we had introduced a capital planning process that was different than that in the past. In fact, we looked very much through the Department of Infrastructure Renewal at multi-year budgeting, as we did with a five-year highway plan, road construction plan. That we felt this was a good model. I congratulated him on and his council on having the foresight to bring forward a multi-year plan, and we agreed to work with him. As the member opposite would know, we actually bring out capital budgets in the fall. So that contractors who are looking to participate in bids on projects will know in advance of the spring budget that those projects are coming forward, and therefore will be better able to prepare for those bids. So we look forward to working with the mayor of CBRM on this to the benefit of the people of Industrial Cape Breton and, of course, of all those communities within the regional municipality, but also because we think this is a good model for the rest of the province. We believe that others through the Union of Nova Scotia Municipalities may want to also participate in.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I believe there was a specific ask in negotiations with the Premier at that time. Now, if the CBRM was a big company, I'm sure the check would already be in the mail. We believe it would be better to be a productive partner with municipalities rather than work against them. Will the Premier commit to open and honest negotiations while ensuring the outlying projects are desperately needed and follow through completion? And what I'm hearing is, by the sounds like, will he commit to that, especially in the fall?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's one of those days where a question is getting asked and an answer is being given, and I quite frankly think we're on the same page, even though the answer and question seem to be missing each other. The reality is that we want to work with the CBRM. They have top lined some estimates on some projects, and as I said to the mayor, and he seemed to be quite open to this, we're willing to work with him to look at the projects that he put on those lists, just as we did with the dredging of the harbour in Sydney. We were a full partner in that project. We look forward to being a full partner in other projects along with the federal government. And we're going to do that not just for CBRM, but for the other parts of the province as well.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I didn't know the boundaries had changed in the valley, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Muskrat Falls project poses more questions than answers, and certainly after the minister's visit to Berwick, the emails to my office indicate a lot more questions. A rush process through the UARB, coupled with the fact that the Premier and the Minister of Energy either know and won't say, or don't know and don't care what the deal will mean for power rates. Well, Mr. Speaker, hospitals have been challenged with increasing electricity rates under this government and the previous government, in fact. The most recent annual report of Capital District cites their increase in plant and utilities budget to increases in electricity rates. I will table that document. Could the Minister of Health and Wellness tell us what this multi-billion-dollar project will mean for power rates and whether services to patients will be cut as a result?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm proud to say that we've been working extremely hard with our district health authorities across the province to ensure that we look at the budgets of each district health authority to see where we can divert or save money, especially around health administrative costs, Mr. Speaker, and reinvest that into frontline health care. What it means to our province and to the health authority, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to the Muskrat Falls, is stability, something that we've never seen under the former Liberal government back in the 90s.
The honourable member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it goes without saying that hospitals can't function without power. Turning off the lights in operating rooms is not an option. Reducing the hours of operation of hospitals and scaling back on the delivery of health care is not an option. Despite this NDP's government's boasting that this is a good deal, not one person in government can or will tell anyone how much power will be. Why would the Minister of Health and Wellness champion a multi-billion dollar project if he doesn't know whether there will be a negative impact on the delivery of frontline health care services?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know that Nova Scotians want a government to react to the increased costs of electricity over the last number of years, Mr. Speaker. We've been shackled to fossil fuel costs for decades. Decades, Mr. Speaker. We have to do things different. That's why we're doing things different in community services. That's why we're doing things different in education. That's why we're doing things different in healthcare, Mr. Speaker. And we're going to do the same thing with energy. We cannot do what the former governments have done and shackle ourselves to fossil fuel. We need to have a diversified, renewable electrical source of energy here in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. And the Muskrat Falls project will not only create economic wealth in the province, Mr. Speaker, but allow us to really have control of our own destiny when it comes to energy here in Nova Scotia, something we've never had for many, many years, Mr. Speaker, and we blame it both on the Liberals and Tories of the past.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and there seems to be a lot of blame going around. But Mr. Speaker, I would love to see the $3 or $4 billion that Muskrat Falls will cost the Nova Scotia ratepayer be invested in Nova Scotia in our innovative companies to produce energy. Mr. Speaker, some of the biggest users of electricity in this province are hospitals. Every other hospital in this country has been spared 30% three-year increase in energy costs that this NDP government has allowed. Now, again, they remain silent. The impact of the unknown is as challenging to hospital budgets as it is to Nova Scotians' pocketbooks. Could the Minister of Health and Wellness please indicate for all members of the House what impact the multi-billion dollar Muskrat Falls deal will have on the ability for hospitals to deliver frontline healthcare services past 2017?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What it's going to have is a positive effect when those health administrators work towards providing and preparing a yearly budget, Mr. Speaker. Right now, we don't know how much power is going to be next year, but I know under the Muskrat Falls agreement, Mr. Speaker, when that power comes into Nova Scotia, it's going to be more stable, the lowest power rate that we can get here in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank all those health administrators, the health authorities across the province who have worked extremely hard over the last 3 years to control costs, Mr. Speaker. We're being recognized on a national stage on some of the innovation that we've had, not only in healthcare but in other areas, Mr. Speaker. I have ministers of health who are liberals, who are conservatives, who are looking at our models here in Nova Scotia, not only in healthcare but in other areas of departments and services that we provide, Mr. Speaker. We're not going to do what the Liberals did when they were in power when it came to health care, Mr. Speaker. They allowed health care authorities to run huge deficits, Mr. Speaker. Our health authorities are running balanced budgets, Mr. Speaker. They're doing it in a responsible way, and we're going to continue to work with them in that manner.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister of Finance avoided answering a simple question about whether or not she was prepaying universities yet again.
This is something that Deloitte advised that she should not do, and yesterday it was the second time that she simply refused to answer the question. If there was no prepayment in the 2012-13 fiscal year, the minister would have given a simple no for an answer. This speaks to another budgetary fiction that the NDP are fond of, and that is estimating employment numbers that are much higher than the year-end actual show. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Finance tell Nova Scotians if she will be continuing the practice of her predecessor of estimating employment numbers at higher rates than are shown by year-end actuals?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there were a lot of different themes in that question. And once again, characteristic of the members of the official opposition, a lot of misfactual information that's not factual. Mr. Speaker, I will be very pleased tomorrow to stand in my place and table a balanced budget for the province of Nova Scotia, putting us on a new path, Mr. Speaker. Putting us on a new path to a much brighter future, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, there's one theme in the question, and that is that we can't trust the kind of financial work that the government is doing. Whether it's prepaying universities or whether it's stacking the numbers on your employment FTEs, either way, it makes the figures less and less reliable. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of financial fictions in what we've seen over the last 3 years with the NDP government's various budgets that they have brought in. We certainly question the math that the NDP have used to estimate FTEs over those last 3 years. It's been a practice of the previous finance minister. We've seen no evidence that the current finance minister is going to do any differently in this coming budget. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is will the minister finally abandon the NDP inclination to inflate and budget estimates, especially when it comes to employment figures?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think most members would have read the Deloitte review of the state of the province's finances 4 years ago when we became government. And, you know, that review indicated that Nova Scotia was on an unsustainable path. We would be facing a $1.3 billion deficit this year, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I think the advice we got from the expert panel of eminent economists was a very sensible group of recommendations, and this will accumulate tomorrow, Mr. Speaker, in a plan that has succeeded, a multi-year plan, returning this province to a balanced budget and fulfilling one of the key commitments of this government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, the minister carries on with another one of the famous fictions that are coming out of this NDP government, and that is a fiction they've had the audacity, Mr. Speaker, to put into advertisements on television to suggest that they have actually cut the deficit by $1 billion or $1.4 billion, whatever the figure is. Mr. Speaker, that was never an actual deficit. It never happened. It was fiction. Mr. Speaker, it's rather galling to see that as a claim that you've actually trimmed that money when it was never, ever in the deficit to begin with. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, why should we trust you tomorrow or today in these fictional figures that she's just throwing out there with no backup?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have to say the Honourable Member's idea of audacity and mine are quite different, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my idea of audacity is putting tolls on the highways of Nova Scotia. My idea of audacity is building P3 schools, Mr. Speaker. My idea
area of audacity is user fees on pap smears and canceling the children's dental program, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a balanced budget putting this province on a better path, Mr. Speaker, to prosperity is not audacious, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The NDP have been fond of saying that we are turning the corner. We're certainly turning the corner, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. And to use the Deputy Premier's term, quote, this falls under the category, if you say it enough times, you believe it. Yay! Yay! I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are having a hard time believing this NDP spin. Yeah. The 6,400 Nova Scotians who lost employment last year are having a really hard time believing this NDP spin. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Economic Development explain to Nova Scotians who are worried about finding work or maintaining their jobs that the worst employment performance in Canada is turning the corner?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, proof that we are turning the corner, Mr. Speaker, is when we announced in the fall projects, engineering, coming from Calgary to Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, further proof of that is when we announced that IBM was going to locate here in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, further proof of that is that when we made those investments in companies in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, further proof of that is when we signed on with Muskrat Falls to create good jobs in the province of Nova Scotia and stable energy prices, Mr. Speaker. Further proof of that, Mr. Speaker, it's Nova Center right across the street, Mr. Speaker, when we signed on along with the federal government to create more employment, to create a brighter future, Mr. Speaker, for all of Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, the proof is truly in the pudding.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, right now the unemployment rate in Cape Breton is 17%. There are 4,000 fewer people employed on the island over the last year, Mr. Speaker. So what proof is that Nova Scotians need about the state of the economy? The Minister knows full well if there were not work outside the province, these numbers would be much higher and better reflect the grim reality we're facing on the island. Mr. Speaker, the Minister just suggested that an influx of jobs related to Muskrat Falls for Cape Breton. The only thing we've learned about the NSP jobs plan for Cape Breton is that Lingam will be closing if the link comes online. So my question, the economy of Cape Breton desperately needs a boost, Mr. Speaker. Will the Minister tell Cape Bretoners how 17% unemployment rate and thousands of jobs lost is turning the corner, and how many jobs will be created in Cape Breton as a result of the Maritime Link?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the member opposite had his way, we wouldn't have a new page Port Hawkesbury today, Mr. Speaker. 1,400 jobs that we invested in because we believe in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the member opposite had his way, we wouldn't invest it in the business like Bill did it, Mr. Speaker. Coalpaw, East Coast Fabricators, Mr. Speaker. Hundreds of jobs, Mr. Speaker, that we've invested in so that there would be jobs in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. Unlike the federal government that's taken jobs out of the province, we're putting jobs in, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, although every geographic region in the province outside of Halifax is suffering, one of the more concerning trends hits every community. Youth in our province are continuing to struggle under the NDP. Young Nova Scotians face an unemployment rate of nearly 19%, Mr. Speaker. These are the same young Nova Scotians who have been saddled with enormous student debt loads and are choosing to look out west to find work. Young people need a reason to stay in their communities, to live, and to raise a family. But to do this, they need good, stable employment, Mr. Speaker. So my question, will the minister stop reading talking points and explain to young Nova Scotians how 19% unemployment rate is turning the corner?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I find that rather funny when the member over there is... Mr. Speaker, I find that rather funny and rather ironic that the member over there would talk about speaking notes when he stands up there reading from a script, Mr. Speaker, reading from a script. You know, Mr. Speaker, if he had his way, I could go on about the investments that this province made in Cape Breton and that we will continue to make in Cape Breton to create good jobs, to maintain good jobs, unlike that party over there, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. We learned today at public accounts that parents of over 800 children in Nova Scotia give up jobs and money to be home with their children to give them a homeschooled education. We do know that the Auditor General has concerns about tracking the progress made by those students, but we also learned that there's only been two incidents in the last 3 years that have been cause for concern for the department to interject. Will the minister confirm that she will consult with all homeschooling parents before making any legislative changes which will affect them?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member opposite for that question. We have a unique situation in this province that parents do have the right to choose their child's educational journey. And we have many homeschoolers in our province that are doing a fine job with their young people. And many of my friends are homeschoolers. I know that many of us would like to have had the opportunity to do that. The question that the member brings forward is, will we be consulting with members of the homeschool community? Absolutely. This is part of what we will be doing. We'll be working with our homeschoolers with anything with we, excuse me, Mr. Speaker, I was being interrupted. I've made the commitment that we will be working with the homeschool community. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the Minister for her commitment on that. And I know we only have a few seconds left. I would ask her, could she give parents of homeschooled children a statement of comfort today so that they can be assured that the department will respect their decision to educate their children and not take a heavy-handed approach in implementing the recommendations?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I hope that my words are of comfort to our homeschoolers. We are going to make sure that if there are any changes with the procedures in Nova Scotia, it will be in consultation with our homeschool community. Thank you.
Please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to Minister has expired. I will now recognize the host leader of the official opposition to call business.
Speaker, could you please call Bill number 17, a blueprint for the future of public education in Nova Scotia Act.
Bill number 17, blueprint for the future of public education in Nova Scotia. I will now recognize the honourable member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to stand in my place and speak to Bill number 17, a blueprint for the future of public education in Nova Scotia. It can also be called a comprehensive review of the public school program. We know that the public school program